This is the place of the Magna Carta. This is the place of freedoms. But in this country, we have forgotten the belief system, the worldview, the religion, which is Christianity, that gave Great Britain those freedoms, that framework.
Coming up on British Thought Leaders, Andrea Williams, CEO of Christian Concern and the Christian Legal Centre. Andrea talks about the difficulties of upholding belief when the world and the church has gone woke.
What that's done has removed the idea of God, asserted a whole load of human rights which compete with one another, and has in fact become deeply illiberal and deeply intolerant. And enforcing compliance to a new ideology. And if you don't agree with the new ideology, you will be punished.
And the legal battles faced by those who are punished for their faith.
Are they going to remove all Christians from public life? Well, what will happen then? You know, or will the Christians just be timid and silenced?
Welcome to British Thought Leaders. I'm Lee Hall. Today I'm sitting down with Andrea Williams, CEO of Christian Concern. Andrea, thank you for joining us.
Great to be with you.
Can you give us some brief introduction to what your organisation does and why it's important?
Yes, Christian Concern is an organisation which seeks to promote Christian truth, Christian values, Christian freedoms at the heart of public life here in the United Kingdom. So we do that in a variety of methods. We do that through defending Christians who, as a result of living and speaking out their faith, find themselves in trouble at work or in the public space. We also do that through education, through parliamentary lobbying, and also through media.
So you run the Christian Legal Centre.
Yes.
You must have seen some quite high-profile cases of people suffering for their faith.
Absolutely, yes.
How would you describe the environment for Christians in Britain at the moment?
Well, when I was qualified as a barrister in 1988, if you had said to me that in the United Kingdom, well, even then, if you'd said to me that we would redefine marriage to be between two men and two women, and that we would redefine family to say that it could be headed by two men, two women, a man and a woman, and children within those households in any form, whether by fostering an adoption or fertility treatments. If you'd said that these things were possible and would be called family units and given exact equivalent status in law and be promoted in our schools as equivalent, and that not to agree with this would be viewed as discriminatory and receive sanction, I'd have said that it would be impossible in the United Kingdom, that we would so redefine the family unit and marriage. If you had said that in law we would say that a person could redefine their sex on their birth certificate so that a person born biologically male could rewrite their passport and their birth certificate, I said that this would have been impossible in the United Kingdom. That was in the 1980s. But all of these things, of course, are absolutely mainstreamed and promoted today. And we have 1,000 case inquiries at the Christian Legal Centre every single year, where people are in trouble in this country simply for believing that marriage is between a man and a woman, or for believing and living out their Christian faith, or for instance, seeking to protect an 8-year-old child that says that they want to transition, but a teacher that questions that loses her job and is reported to the authorities and even deemed unsuitable to teach at all, to have a teaching regulation license removed. So these sorts of things are the things that we're dealing with day in, day out at the Christian Legal Centre. But there is essentially at the heart of British public life a massive loss of corporate Christian faith, a corporate Christian identity. Now, I know as a Christian myself, you know, it's really personal faith is really important. But that which has undergirded this nation has been a consensus that we were a Christian nation and that our laws and our institutions are undergirded with that foundation. But that has been very much eradicated.
I mean, for centuries, we've had a set of moral standards that are followed, but it seems with progressive liberal ideologies, these things have been attacked. A lot of the kind of values that are in direct opposition to what's in the Bible have been adopted by the church administration now. And how do you feel it's affected Christians in Britain with this kind of wokeness in the church?
Well, I think that is one of the saddest things of all. And I've just mentioned to you that there were many things that I couldn't have imagined in the 1980s. Well, I would go back now to my younger self or to the church leaders in the 1980s, and if I could, and I would say, hold on to faith. Do not be ashamed of Christian truth. Do not be ashamed. Do not privatise faith. Do not shrink faith. Do not make it small, but rather say that it has something to say about the whole of life, about the meaning of life, about sanctity of life, about the structure of family, about the structure of society, about good governance, about education, about good parliament, about good law, about good culture, about good music, about good art, even about food. I'd say that the gospel has something to say about the whole of life. And be confident and be public in this. And I feel as if the church allowed herself almost to be shamed into silence or to become one truth among many, permitted this kind of strange mistruth that secularism is somehow neutral and that we're all beliefs that operate in some sort of neutral square, when in fact secularism is not neutral at all. We've seen the outworking of it. And Christianity has permitted, or the church has permitted Christianity to fade from public life, or certainly what the outworking of Christianity means. So that is a great shame. So there's a sense in which because Christian leaders didn't speak early enough, they then began not to have the courage to speak, so that we have in the Church of England a church that, where sadly they cannot say clearly what marriage is, that have now voted to bless same-sex unions, that have liturgy to mark a person's transition from male to female, which of course I would say is not possible, but the church now has gender-affirming liturgy. So these things have all occurred within the church, and I think the church of the nation, the established church, and I think that's very damaging for the whole of society and damaging to the witness of Christianity. But I think we can't lay it all at the door of the Church of England, because there's a sense in which where are the rest of the denominations as well in terms of really speaking truth into this situation.
So the sexual revolution has had staggering effects on our society in all sorts of ways. I mean, things that were considered shameful before, now it's kind of the tables have turned, and if you oppose those things, you're shamed yourself. Do you think it's almost become, you know, risky to profess to Christian views on sexual ethics?
Well, what's happened as a result of the sexual revolution is that there's a sense in which people have become demoralised. So people were sold a myth in the 1960s with the advent of the contraception pill, and they were sold a myth that sexual intimacy would be free, carefree, it was recreational, not procreational, and love was love was love. And there's a sense in which the world at that time was promised a whole lot of freedom. But today, we're living with the consequences, some 60 years later, of that, which feels in many ways catastrophic when we look at the numbers of the porn numbers, for instance, that are so prevalent and which are so damaging in our society. When we look at the child happiness rate, there, all of these things are symptomatic in a sense from of losing this very special place for sexual expression within marriage between one man and one woman, which forms the beautiful and safe and secure and moral bedrock of society. And there's a sense that when we let go of that, we let go of the heart of civilization. And when we let go of that, what we've seen, and with that, it was actually also a letting go of God. And there's a sense in which we think, we'll do it our way. We'll be free. We'll do it our way. And so I was born in the 1960s, in 1965. So there's a sense in which my parents' generation forgot God and lived out the sexual revolution. My generation then followed that. Our children followed that. And we're now living with the next generation, the generations in between. So it's 3 to 4 generations that are living without a frame, a God framework, and without a moral framework, a sexual moral framework. And the truth is that people hurt when they give themselves away in terms of sexual expression. And when that's not within the beauty of a dedicated marriage for life, what we then have is actually what we see with so many is a deep unhappiness. And we also then see as a result of it, for instance, huge numbers of abortions. Why? Because the product of sex that is not committed or within a marriage is that children are created that are then not planned for. That creates a need for abortion, and what we have in this country now, 60 years later, is in fact 10.2 million abortions have occurred in this country. That's the whole of London wiped out. That's, you know, that is a sixth of our population has not had their first breath as a result of what we call sexual freedom. So these are real and huge consequences as a result of the sexual revolution back in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. To speak of these things then becomes increasingly difficult within society because, first of all, people are very often living with the mess themselves and have become literally demoralized and also intimidated by the culture that continues to say, no, really, this is good. Really, this is freedom. Just be who you want to be. Love who you want to love. You can be, and we start introducing into our schools that you can be sexually free. Just be ready, be safe. You can be, love whoever you want. And you can be any gender you want. All of these things are being taught without constraint to our children. And what that's actually led to is a world of confusion. So if in the midst of this, you are a person who loves Jesus, loves the Bible, loves biblical truth, and has the courage to speak, or the courage to resist, perhaps materials that you're being told to teach and you don't want to, then you will be brought before the authorities. And you, in fact, are told that you're the one who is unkind. You're the one that's immoral. And in fact, it's actually the other way around. So first of all, people self-censor and silence. And if they don't, they may well find themselves in trouble.
Sort of your recent cases that was particularly interesting was Felix Ngola.
Yes.
Can you tell us a bit about that?
He was an asylum seeker here from Cameroon. He's been caring for people since his arrival here, working as a carer. The first case that he had was he was on a social work course in the University of Sheffield, and he posted Facebook posts in support of marriage on his Facebook post, and he became an online discussion, and he was answering questions in this online discussion. One of his classmates followed what he was saying, saw that he was posting biblical comments, reported him to the supervisor on the university course, and he was removed from Sheffield University's course degree program for social work because it was deemed by the university that he would be unfit to be a social worker because of his Christian views, and that a service user that would know that Felix Ngole had such views would not want to be looked after by Felix. Of course, the truth is absolutely the contrary, in that Felix has looked after hundreds of people and never had one complaint, and everybody absolutely loves him. And if you meet him, he's very warm. I mean, he's one of those sorts of characters as well. I mean, that he is warm, he's bubbly, he's just made to be a carer. We took the case, we lost at first instance in the Employment Tribunal, then again on appeal to the Employment Appeal Tribunal, but we won at the Court of Appeal, where we set precedent to say that it was that posting about and believing biblical truth on marriage does not discriminate, and that there was no evidence that Felix Ngole had ever discriminated or would ever discriminate. So we won an important precedent on that, in terms of posting on Facebook Bible beliefs doesn't make you a discriminator. Which, I mean, one funny point in this case was when one of the Court of Appeal judges said, well, would Mother Teresa be a discriminator on this analysis? So that was a great moment. That was a great moment in the case, because indeed she would have fallen foul of the test that was being applied to Felix Ngole. So great. He then moves forward. He's applying for, he goes, he completes the course late, much later than hoped, but he completes the course, then applies for jobs. He gets placed, he gets into the final round of and offered a job with an agency that helps move people from a mental health hospitalisation back into the community. And he comes out top in all the tests. They absolutely love him in the interview. They were raving about him. This is all, we see this all evidenced. He's offered the job. When they are then looking up the references, receiving the references, which are good, but they Google him and they find his story. Right. And they say, we can't have someone with these homophobic views working for us in this agency. So then the next thing is they call him up and say that they're withdrawing the job, and because somebody with his views would discriminate, and that a service user would feel that might even kill themselves if they knew that somebody who believed in the things that Felix believed in was going to help them. They actually put this forward.
The idea that someone doesn't get offered a job, not because they've done something wrong or even said something wrong, but just because they have a certain belief. So it's almost like thought Christian crime beliefs. Territory, really.
It is having Christian beliefs.
Right.
And I think that that's what we, as I recall with you today, I think that we have to really take that very seriously. The viewers, I'd say to the viewers, really take this very seriously. I'm speaking, we're recording in Westminster. We're recording a stone throw from Parliament. You know, this is the mother of parliaments across the world. This is the place of the Magna Carta. This is the place of freedoms. But in this country, we have forgotten the belief system, the worldview, the religion, which is Christianity, that gave Great Britain those freedoms, that framework. The great law was the biblical law. The great law of the Magna Carta, we should all be subject to the law, including the king, was that there was a greater law even than the king, and that was the supreme lawgiver, which is God. And he gives each one of us, whether we're the king or the pauper, and I'm going back to medieval times, each one of us innate dignity in the eyes of the law. And each one of us is accorded that dignity according to the law. And that is a beautiful thing. And that's how you get true tolerance. That's how you get true understanding of the worth of every individual and respect for every individual and lack of coercion of every individual. And what a hard equality, secular, anti-discrimination, so-called anti-discrimination set of laws has done, which has come through since the Human Rights Act and in this country in particular, 1998, and then the equality legislation of 2010. What that's done has removed the idea of God, asserted a whole load of human rights which compete with one another, and has in fact become deeply illiberal and deeply intolerant. And enforcing compliance to a new ideology. And if you don't agree with the new ideology, you will be punished. And that's why Christian Legal Centre exists. I mean, I didn't have in my mind when I was in a young barrister, I did not have in my mind that I would start a Christian Legal Centre. I did not have in my mind this is what I would spend my life doing. But here I am talking to you about it.
You think cases like Felix's and other ones you work on make people almost afraid or not want to kind of admit to having faith and to keep it hidden away?
Well, I say to people, no, be courageous. As a result of these cases, be courageous. Here we are, we stand. If anything happens, we're here. Wear your cross. Say a prayer. Speak about your faith. Take your Bible into work. Be bold. Be unashamed of your faith. Be unashamed of Christ. I say this wherever I go, to keep on and speak Christian morality. Do not be afraid of these things, is what I say. I think there is, however, nonetheless, a self-censoring. So that does occur. But I want to say the opposite. I want to say, are they going to remove all Christians from public life? Well, what will happen then? You know, or will the Christians just be timid and silenced? Loving Christ in Britain today, it may cost you a bad Twitter feed. It may cost you your job, your livelihood. It may cost you your popularity. It may cost you really hard graft to how am I going to educate my children? Can I put them into a state school system or even a private education system where the government regulatory authority says that we have to teach our children these things on sex education, put these things in the curriculum? You may say it may mean that you have to think of a different way of educating your children. It will mean that there is hard work to do with a lot of people who've been hurt by the system. You know, every day there are 800 babies to save that would otherwise be aborted. That's hard work. Let's do it. Are we not a civilized enough people to say we can save those mums and babies, mums, mothers, fathers and babies? 800 a day. We can do that as a civilized society. We can think life, not death. There is no right to kill our unborn children. No secular liberal human rights say no, there's a right to kill my child. Now, increasingly, no, there's a right to kill myself when I want to. There's a right to be whoever I want to be. And if you disagree, you're punished. You can't come to an abortion clinic. You can't pray outside of an abortion clinic. You can't come and try and save our babies. There are spaces you're prohibited to pray in the United Kingdom now because it's our right to kill our unborn children. Well, how did Britain get to a place whereby there's a right to kill our unborn children? That's where we're at. That's exactly where we're at. And that right trumps even our freedom to pray outside a clinic, our freedom to speak outside of a clinic, our freedom to hold a sign outside a clinic, our freedom to help a woman outside a clinic. There's something very wrong there.
Andrea Williams, thank you for joining us.